Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver podcast. We're happy you're here. On the podcast, we're certain that you'll relate to the caregiver stories and find comfort with your honorary sisters. Now, before we start, I want to remind you to go to our website, confessionsofareluctantcaregiver.com, and sign up for our newsletter. It's full of useful information that you can immediately use. Now, let's learn more about today's guest. Okay, today, we are so excited to have our friend Consuela Marshall with us, who has quite the confession, ladies. She'll be sharing the good, the bad, and the ugly with respect to caregiving. Yes. We can all relate. So, like all of us, Consuela has been a caregiver, but honestly, she's so much more than that. So, Jay, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about our sister in care?
I would like to call her the sister in crime as well.
So. Oh, I love it.
I'll take that.
So, Consuela, she has so many facets in caregiving. So, professionally, she has been an occupational therapist with the same agency for 20 years. She says she loves her community, and she has so many clients over and over again with different illnesses. Yeah. What is fantastic is when she says she sees them in grocery stores, she sees their families in stores, she sees them in church, and she loves that connection, which I love about you. Consuela, she lives in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, so she's
Louisiana.
A true Southerner. She's married. She says she's married and loving it.
Oh, wow.
Are you newly married?
She's got three kids. She's got four grands. She loves running, dancing, outdoors, gardening, plants, nature. And Natalie, she is your heart child because she hates cooking.
Oh,
yes.
She's got six sisters and one brother, but six sisters just about killed me.
Wow.
But she, Consuela, you became a caregiver. You've always been a caregiver, but when your mom, her health started to decline, and after a stroke, she stayed with you 6 weeks. She eventually moved in. And
don't give it all away.
Well, I know that, but these are the things that really hit me. This is what we really want to hear from you, because this is a confession. You said it was a struggle for her to adjust. And that struggle was for you and her. And this was the part, and this is definitely the meat where we want to get you to. It honestly, it was not all her fault, because we were too much alike. So, Natalie, you said, Consuela, we did have some good times, but mostly sometimes that was few and far between. And, so that's a lot of us. So Consuela, we know that your story is going to touch a lot of ours and our listeners, and we can't wait to hear from you, girl. So,
we
talked about you and how you got to where you are today. So tell us a little bit about that past. Tell us, you know, how you got started in caregiving and just get us going.
Do it, girl.
Well, thank you for summing me up. That's about it.
Hates you know, cooking.
You know, caregiving intersects so many things. And in that story, I with every point, I could have went off in 100 directions of how life intersects so many ways along the path, and how we circle back around through certain things. And it's been quite the journey that I didn't even know I knew I was on it, but I didn't expect the turns. I didn't expect the scenery. I didn't expect the rocky roads on the course. I definitely didn't expect that. I think I was looking at it with more rosy eyes, and it wasn't that way. So, in regard to my mom, I'm going to back up a little bit, because I will just add that I do have a daughter with a disability, and it's just something I don't add to finding a foothold, but it is definitely a part of my life in that it also formed who I am. And adding that into the picture of all the other things that I do, it really just helped to mold my heart and fashion my heart to really want to help people who are at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And when it's your mom, you definitely want to come to her rescue and say, oh, I definitely want to help her. Mm-hmm. And yes. often seeing that it's never often a lot initially. It's just learning how to fit into that. And then it's just a like wide ride the waves of caregiving is what I've tried to look at. Is how am I going to enter into that role? And what and how to manage those ebbs and flows of caregiving is what is really the whole premise of caregiving is how do you navigate and how do you stay afloat in the mm-hmm. ups and the downs of caregiving. So in helping me to do that, I have to pull from all of those aspects of my life.
Yeah.
Even before, I mean, where being a therapist really started with seeing my daughter having therapy. And that's like, I can do that. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then years later, just seeing how everything that you see as a challenge can really be overcome with little bitty steps that you make.
Yeah.
Or it's just little shifts in your balance that keep you afloat versus you're falling over the edge and then you're drowning. Yeah. And how to make those shifts as you're going through caregiving is really the key.
Yeah.
It really is the key. And it's so hard to do it when it's your parent.
Yeah. Yes.
And I would, and look, for me, in going into homes, and I'm like, hi, I'm Consuela, I'm the therapist, how are you doing? And I'm doing home health. I had on a different set of eyes that mm-hmm. were very blinded. I was very limited on what I was seeing.
Is that because you got to leave? Like you went in and you were like, okay, I
got to see the good parent who was on their best behavior while I was
girl,
in here.
Yes. Yes. All of us are like, yes, because they were on their best behavior.
And I would say, like, that daughter is so mean to her mom. Like, oh my gosh. Let me tell you, my mom took my schooling. I got a PhD, and my mom's first name is Pinky. So that Pinky, I'm telling you, they gave me the PhD in being a therapist because it was that component of knowing her and knowing how to deal with someone who knows you personally, who knows how to push all of your buttons.
Oh, mm.
Who knows how.
Preach.
That made me such a much more well-rounded therapist. I think my therapy really started when I became my mom's caregiver.
Isn't that
I took it from another. You know, I was always empathetic with caregivers because I do remember, even just in regards to my daughter, mm-hmm. how it feels to be isolated when other people get to do everything or other people get to do stuff. And then, it's not like she couldn't do it. We did a lot of things, but, I always had a compassion in my heart for caregivers, mm-hmm. But not like it took that turn when my mom, it was now my mom and I was mm-hmm. the caregiver and having to restructure how I looked at caregiving and how I just had more empathy for that person who is caring for that one, because you're dealing with more than just that physical aspect of caring for them. You're also mm-hmm. having to deal with so much background noise, so much, things from the past that filter into the caregiving that make it so much more complicated than putting your hands on a person and doing a task. It is, it could be the simplest task and you were going to do it anyway, but just because they said it in a different tone.
Ooh, that's why you're speaking my language.
Well, and that was the things I had to deal with in caregiving is how to tamper myself, how to get myself under control while I'm caring for my mom, because bottom line was I never not wanted to do it. There was never a moment that I didn't care for my mom. I can honestly say there was periods I did not like my mom because the tension was so hot, was just so tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to start this by saying that she did not want me to be her caregiver. And that's the whole, and then I find it the flip of what a lot of people tell me, like, they don't want to be a caregiver. I didn't ask for this. I didn't sign up for it. I knew in my heart that it was going to be me. I knew
out of all your siblings,
out of all of my sisters, I knew it because for some reason they thought I was, I knew it all. I'm like, I don't know it all, but they knew I had an advantage because being a therapist that I would be a better person to do it. No one ever spoke it. I just knew it. It would be me because they always looked to me for answers. So I just sort of knew when the time came that it would be me that I would care for my mom.
Now and you lived farther away from your mom, right?
Yeah. I live 4 hours away from my mom.
Yeah. So you were a long distance caregiver for a window of time, whereas your siblings who lived closer, is that right?
Yeah. They were direct hands-on.
Okay.
They were there they were there. And my mom was intact cognitively.
Yeah.
Set in her ways. We lived in the same house since I was in the fourth grade, that she was still in that same house. That wasn't functional for her. I mean, luckily it was an older house with large doors and hardwood floors.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was still the yellow bathroom with the yellow tub and the yellow toilet and the yellow sink that she just adored.
Preach.
The linoleum floor in the bathroom. That is nothing wrong with my, I think the floor was linoleum yellow too.
Yeah.
And that was just our house. And it was just not conducive for her to be there by herself. And, but she fought it and we allowed her to be there. And you know, she had the right to be there, but it made it difficult. And it wasn't safe because it was a multi-level. It wasn't like a two-story, but it was a split floor plan where you can go down to a couple of bedrooms, come up four steps, and you're at another bedrooms. But it was where she wanted to live, and it just became difficult for them. But look, they managed. And I'm going to honestly say I didn't do a lot in that. They would just call me whenever she fell. But other than that, they handled the meds, the doctors. And my mom hid so much. My mom even though they lived in the same city, they really didn't know a lot. My mom didn't drive, but she would call a taxi to take her to the doctor. She would get the man next door who had he was an Uber before there was an Uber service that would, you know, pay him a couple of dollars and I'll take you to the store type of thing.
Wow.
And my mom just tried. She was holding on to her independence and she was doing things the best that she could. But when it wasn't holding together anymore. And my sisters were starting to help out. But the more they did, the more my mom undid. And I just was back in the background, not really knowing any of this. I was just living my life, working, seeing home health patients and just being grateful. Oh, my mom still lives by herself. Thank God for that. But didn't know my mom's life was just crumbling. Because on the visits that I would make, I didn't see everything. You know, it's funny how you can be a therapist and I can walk into everybody's house and I can see, okay, I see some things I need to slowly start to approach with them after I'm here for a while and get the rapport with them. And I can, I have my little strategy when I'm in a patient's house. I don't ever go in and say, oh, Lord, why is, you know, you do this or do that. Yes. I just sort of, I'm eyeballing it. I'm just in a generality saying, you know, I do see some concerns. But look, I'm going to mention this one because I really think we need to address this. This needs to be my first goal for you. But then I'm already seeing there's tons of things, but can't go there yet. But in my mom's house, I couldn't really do that. I don't know. I would just come in and plop on that sofa that we've had for years. And tall as I am, I was having a hard time getting off. I mean, I was just like trying to get off of it, but that was our sofa. I mean, I never even saw that I struggled because that's just the way I sit on that sofa, on that corner. And
isn't that interesting?
It always been like
interesting. Well, it's because you're going with you're going with a different lens into your client's home and thinking, oh, you're going to have problems with this or you're going to have problems with that. And then I think it's because it's so personal.
I don't know. Yeah, that could very well be it. And that the coffee table and the sofa, she couldn't get her walker close enough. So she would leave a walker on the other side of the room and like bent over 90 degrees and holding on and walking through a little space this little to sit on the sofa and then go bloop because the sofa was so low. And then trying to struggle. I'm like, then one day I just walked in there with my therapist lens on and I'm like, Ma, this is just not working. Why? Yeah. And I wasn't, I didn't even use my skills that I know. I'm just like, Mom, we got to move this table. We got to do this. I'm moving rugs.
Yeah. So you came in like a wrecking ball, like me.
But you know what? I think I did it I think just going back to my childhood came out. Like, for so many years, that's just how we talked to each other.
Yeah.
You know, yes. She didn't ask us questions. She like, tell us what to do and accuse one sister of, you know, we were like, we had a very lively childhood. I'm just going to say that.
Wow, I like that nice word.
That's how we talk about
that was
it.
Lively.
We had lively and it was good. My mom was a single mom and she protected us. I'm telling you, we had to go in groups everywhere. So we were, and just the language that we had. And I think all of that just came back out. And I'm just like, do this and do that. And then my mom's like, you don't tell me what to do. You're my daughter.
There it is.
Yes.
What to do. You're my daughter. Tell me what to do. Yes. Finger point.
Yes. And I can see that now how I didn't approach it the right way with my mom. So when I say we were too much alike, I think if I had approached it a little bit kindly, she would have been a little bit more receptive to that. But it's like when my eyes opened and I saw that rug in the kitchen on top of a slick floor, the rug had no backing. And I'm like, Mom, you got to move this rug. This is why you are falling in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And just not softening that and really going in there and telling her what to do. It started, I think, her being so defensive toward me.
So I'm curious, how would you have said that to a patient, Consuela, if somebody had a rug like that? What would you have done? What would have been done differently? Okay. If you'd had a patient that was like that.
And it's going to be dependent on who's living with them and everything. I'm in a mode. And if they were my mom, okay, I've done my little assessment. I got my computer and I'm just like taking all my tick marks. Okay. I'm like, look, there's a couple of things that I think are quick fixes, but I want you to think about this. I mean, it's no big deal. And I try to tamper it just like that.
Yeah.
You see the rug by your shoulder? If you step on it the right way, and I'll go in and demonstrate, I'm like, woo, you see what can happen?
Okay.
Or I'll go get their walker, and I would get in, and I'm like, you see what happens? Say, does this ever happen when you're in here?
Okay.
And they would say, yeah or no. I'm like, that's how you fall. So look, don't have to move it, but I'm just going to let you know if you leave it there, that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
But
think about it, and we'll talk about it later. Okay.
So it's just really saying it softly. With them. I didn't have that with my mom. I went in and just hit her with a bulldozer. And it I think it set the tone for our relationship.
Yeah. And that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, so here's the thing. I know that you had mentioned us in another conversation, that you got to this point. And your mom had been falling and she would be in the home by herself for a window of time and she could lay in the floor for hours. And so what was the breaking point where you said, I'm going to move her in with me?
Well, dun, dun, dun.
You know, we had attempted several times. The falls were coming. And we did not know her doctor was already telling her, if you fall one more time, you're going into the nursing home. Although they could technically not have done it because she was able to make her own decisions.
Yeah. Right.
But they were threatening her, but she wasn't telling that. And my sisters, I did not know, we're not going into the room with my mom in the back.
Ooh, that's important.
I didn't know that. I'm like, but y'all went to the doctor with her? Well, we don't go in the back. She won't let us go in the back. I'm like, oh my gosh, y'all are not going in the back. Why are y'all going if you're not going in the back? You know, so I was just like, I didn't know the whole picture. And that's what I'm going to say with caregivers. You can think you know it all. And I thought my sisters had it all. They were doing the best they could. I'm going to tell you with what they knew and how my mom is and how my mom can really shut down and not talk to you for 3 years if you say the wrong thing to her. They didn't want that. And they had to walk eggshells around her. But, you know, in a sense, they just knew, don't go there with mom because she ain't going to listen.
You got to survive. Yeah.
When I knew things had to change was I was getting these phone calls. Girl, this is my sister's. Girl, mom was on the floor last night. She called me and I had to go over there and get her up. I'm like, but could you get her up? Like, yeah, I got her up. So that was the thing. As long as they were getting her up, she was like, okay. And I think most of it, she was sliding off of the sofa, trying to get up and couldn't, and just slid to the floor. So they weren't really, they were falls, but she wasn't hurting herself. But then the falls started happening when she couldn't get up. And my sister would call me, like, she reluctantly gave one a key to her house. It was just like getting in Fort Knox, but they got a key to her house. And found her on the floor. She said she wasn't there that long, but who knows? Mm. Nobody could ever tell. My mom didn't really always say what was really going on. Mm-hmm. But when they could no longer get her up and then had to start calling the husband, and the husband was getting tired, they started calling me. And then she was trying to call neighbors to get her up so nobody would, you know, then her whole plan was falling apart, and she was drowning, and she was getting more desperate because she really wanted to stay in her house. Yeah. But the decision with me was when I told him, stop calling me. I cannot do anything about it. I have had that conversation with my mama. She doesn't want to leave her house. So get caregivers. They did. She fired him because she didn't want anybody sitting there watching her. They don't do anything. They just watching me. I'm like, well, you need to be watched. You need to be watched because you're going to fall on the floor. Yeah. She didn't see any value in that, so she would fire them. I'm like, well, give them something to do. But they're going to put my stuff where I'm not going to find it. I need all of my stuff. I want all of my stuff. That girl came in here yesterday, and I know I had my stuff right here. She going to call herself cleaning up, and she moved all of my stuff, and then she gets mad and fires her.
Yes. Yes. I think that is a very common thing, more than people will ever want to admit.
Yeah.
That your parent fires a lot of people to hide. It sounds like a lot of like hiding, because I think it's they know that they need support. It's the inevitable, but the law. So you stop driving. You need someone to be with you all the time. Yeah. And it's that loss of independence.
And
ultimately you're aging, and is it the fear of death kind of like it's coming?
And, you know, to answer your question, to get quickly to that, because y'all, give me my cues, okay?
Let's move into your house.
Okay, when it's like, we're not doing this anymore, don't call me. She had been on the floor several times, and I'm like, okay, nice to know that. Hope she's okay, bye. Don't call me in the middle of the night crying, because I'm not fazed by it anymore. I'm like, I can't do anything about it. These are her choices. But the moment came when it was no longer. She was starting to hurt herself. She was starting to have a lot of back pain. Physically, she was now, it was evident that arthritis was sort of taking over, and she was having a lot of mobility issues. And my sister was now trying to really telling me about some tidiness and some hygiene issues that were really becoming evident. Yeah. So they were all on the phone after this big fall, and she went to the emergency room. So then I'm up there and I'm like, you're not going back home.
Yeah.
But we didn't really have a plan.
so she had to come back home
because we did not have a plan. Other than, you ain't going home, but I could like get her from the hospital and take her here. So we actually had to get her back home, get therapists there, and sort of get her better while we making a plan. But as she got better with the therapist, she fought again. And oh, I'm better. I don't need to go anywhere. But I'm going to fast forward till she one day, her plans were just not working and she was here. Yeah. And in the meantime, y'all, I had started preparing because I'm thinking this is expensive. I hear these stories all the time. My mom doesn't qualify for Medicaid. She can't have nursing home placement. And really, I don't want my mom in a nursing home. I think I can take care of my own mom.
Yeah.
I mean, my house is totally accessible. I mean, my house was accessible from the bathrooms, just from my daughter's needs. Everything when we built even the kitchen where she could cook.
Right.
Everything. Because I don't like to cook. I'm like, I got to make sure this kitchen is set up because she's got to get to the stove. She's got to get to. Yes. Technically, my daughter doesn't walk.
Yeah.
Not even today.
Yeah.
But everything else, drives, college grad, just everything and cooks and cleans. And I'm like, I can, you know, that's the part of my life I like to keep private, but I do share bits of it. But just in saying that, my house was accessible for my mom in a drop of a hat to come live with me, but she didn't want to. She wanted to live with my sister. I won't say she was a favorite because I don't really know if she was my mom, if she was the favorite. She was the most, she was just definitely more compassionate. She catered to my mom's needs. She allowed herself to be manipulated by my mom, which is bad thing.
We're all like,
I think
my sister Consuela, JJ is on the top left corner of my screen, and Emily is clearly at the bottom. And Emily is, JJ is above Emily, and we're both pointing at the same direction.
Consuela, she calls me JJ probably 50% of the time.
Oh,
I'm like, listen, your favorite is not here.
Yes.
It is because, and you just hit the nail on the head.
So look, I don't know if I'm
so easily manipulated. Like I live in the world of, I'm not weak.
You know what? I don't even, I'm hesitant to say even manipulated. Manipulated could be like you didn't know what was going on. My sister was well aware of my mom's tendencies and she allowed it.
Was she guilty? Because all I did was live in the world of guilt. Like if I don't take care of her, I was like,
I think it was my sister's way of giving back to my mom. Look, my mom always thought my sister was going to go to Texas to go to school, graduate, and come back and live with her. Well, you know, you meet husbands in college and you never come back. But then that was
right, girl.
And it broke my mom's heart that my sister did not come back. To be with her. And there was always this reunion, I think, wanting to happen. Okay. And so she just knew my sister was going to say, come on to Houston. You can live with me.
No.
So she moves in with you.
You got her. You got
her. And then what
happened? Kicking and screaming. And I'm going to tell you, I was going to say that I knew I had to come up with a plan. So I opened a personal care home. So I don't even share a lot about that, but I did. And just saying, I can't afford this. I have to work. I'm kids in school. And my mom wasn't totally needy. And then I did have my daughter who was still here. She could be eyes and ears. I mean, look, she was actually a big part of the caregiving because my mom listened to her. My daughter can go in there and talk to my mom. She said, Mom, you were being mean to mom, saying mean. All she was in here and doing was trying to help you, and you just lashed out at her. And then my mom, I hear my mom like, well, she ought to know. And she would just go, and then my daughter would just talk to her. And when I couldn't get my mom to eat anything because she thought I just couldn't cook. I don't like to cook, but I can cook. I just don't. I think it's a waste of my time. I could be doing something else besides cooking. But that's a different podcast. But she just didn't listen to me, and she just wouldn't take, going back to the past, I was not the one to present any messages to my mom because we were too much alike.
Right.
So I prepared for my mom, and I thought, so as I opened my business, I had other residents coming in, and they're just living in a 6-bed care plan room. And as the beds were filling up, I kept saying, no, this room is taken. I kept the biggest room for my mom. And it actually, I just sort of hung out during there. And that sort of became my sort of office and made it work for me until my mom came.
Yeah.
And then when my mom came, she came kicking and screaming. And I had told all the other residents, my mom is coming this week. And y'all, she's finally here. We had been talking about it for about 2 years at this point. And when she came, my mom was so mad. She wouldn't talk to the residents. I don't need to be here with these other old people. And I had a whole schedule of what time is breakfast. I mean, the whole schedule. The state makes you have everything. It's not like I open my doors of a house and I'm just rolling people in and y'all just do it your own. I mean, I had care plans. I did everything according to the board. And I had my menus. I had 60 days of menus. And look, I need those menus. I need to go up in the attic and find them. You know, and I had routine. Breakfast starts at this time. If you're going to bathe in the morning when the girl comes, you're going to bathe at this time. If you prefer to bathe at night, the nighttime girl would bathe you at night. Right. Mom didn't want to be told what to do. And it just became such a struggle to get her to fit in to the groove. Mm-hmm. So actually at one point it was just like, take her to my house. Just take her to my house and just let me deal with her there because she's making it so difficult here.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you really, in your heart, that I feel like maybe one of the purposes of that home, you had so much hope that it would work.
It was all for her. That was the whole thing. I didn't need anything else to do.
Yeah.
Although I really enjoyed doing it and it was very rewarding financially, everything. And still have tons of friends right now from those same families that we can stand and talk for ages about all the fun things that we did for the holidays with them and everything. And how they knew I hated to cook.
So did you eventually move her out?
No, but I moved everybody else out.
Yeah.
It just became so hard for me to do till I'm like, you know what? This is not working. I'm shutting it down.
Yeah. So you had to choose that, had to say,
but you know, at this point it's been open about 7-8 years and it just really enjoying it. Wow. But at the same time, my kids are growing and my attention is divided. I'm over the crisis of needing something to do with my mom. And really, I'm getting into the end of what I can do for her because it was really becoming so difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And her whole goal was she doesn't want to be here.
Yeah.
Not once did she change her mind. It was not once that
7 years didn't.
Seven years that the business was here.
But she didn't. She still didn't want to be there. How long has she been there?
Oh, now she's passed away now. But I want to say, I don't know. I would say about 4 years, she was actually a resident of the facility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And over the time, just adding new residents would pass away, get new residents. But my mom was always there.
Yeah.
She did, you know, get some friendships with one of the people who were there, but and she settled in when she really knew I'm not going back home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My struggle and what made me it difficult to me is that I felt rejected the rejection I was feeling that I've given so much up. Yes. The expense of buying this home, this was a house and totally getting it renovated by going through all of the inspection process, coming up with all of the policies and procedures and the marketing and all of this was really based on my mom's needs.
Yeah.
And then for her not to even want to be here was really just a dagger that I struggled with. And along the way, issues with just being able to get away, not from the business. You know, if I wanted to get away, I really could get away, and the people who were working for me, my mom came with the thing, but it was always more complicated than that. It was always, I had to make allowances for the people that were residents and then my mom.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because my mom was like a different package.
Yeah.
She could, it's like I always needed to have it was just another element there that made it so much more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
For me.
Well, that's you know what, Consuelo, that's true, because when Emily wants to take a break or go away, the issues that we find, because JJ and I are long distance, we're farther away, is that you can schedule somebody, and we have to schedule for mom, but what's the backup plan to the backup plan in case the caregiver doesn't show up?
Yeah.
And then it totally ruins the plan. And when they don't show up, because services can be unreliable more times than not, I think, Emily, you would probably say they're unreliable.
Correct.
But Consuelo, when you went away, and Emily, what the impact when you go away, like what are the ramifications when you come back?
Yes, ramifications.
Like, mom, you kind of feel, I don't know whether you feel guilty, but mom is almost angry when you've gone away.
Yeah. If mm-hmm. I'm not there, she wanted another sister there. That was yes. that sort of yes. the thing. She didn't belong here. So why am I leaving her here with that girl? Yeah. The girl mm-hmm. always had a name, but every worker that I had was a that girl.
That girl.
Why are yes. you leaving me here with that girl? And I sort of felt like she was most comfortable with having one of the siblings here.
Yeah.
And there were like there were three of us that shared in that. And they did what they could. I can honestly say I have no animosity toward any of my sisters. Mm-hmm. They showed up in their own different ways and they both had yes. and they all had their purposes. One was the mm-hmm. lotion potion girl that massaged my mom from head to toe. I didn't do any of that. I didn't have time. I'm like mm-hmm. slap, slap, rub, hit a drop, put it on. It'll so be yes. motion. You know, it's just like I did it. I just went through the motions and put it on because mm-hmm. I did it. You know what? I didn't have to dress my mom in the morning, but I wanted to be that one that
right.
Okay, I'm waking up. Let me go. Let me go over there and get mom up. Mm-hmm. I think I put that responsibility on myself where I had a caregiver and she did, but she knew I was coming to do my own mom. Yeah. So I would come over and I would do my mom, get her up and get her dressed. And why? And I look back now, I'm like, I think I tortured myself because I could never do it right. You're rolling me too hard. You mm-hmm. missed the spot. You being rough on me. And I think I was just longing for her approval in addition yes. to wanting to make sure she was cared for. And although I did know the other girl would do it. And sometimes she would say, Miss Consuelo, don't come home. Don't come over here. I got yeah. your mom. And that was really good too, when she would say, your mom already up in the chair, so you don't even have to come. So she would like, yeah, my mom up in the chair and in the kitchen and eating breakfast, versus if I went over there, it was a battle because I had to tiptoe around what are the things that my mom wanted me to do. Hey, look, I'm saying this in the beginning, but I got easier. It got easier as I really had to look at it through a different lens. So yeah. And that's what I want to say with caregivers. Don't do it as long as don't take as long as I took to get to where I needed to be. Because on the other side of that, we did have some good times mm-hmm. when yeah. I did yes. have to let it go and walk through the door and go in, and my mom was already dressed and up in the chair. And I'm like, hi, mom, how'd it go this morning? It's all right. And then I'll be like, okay. And just sit there and just have conversation with her mm-hmm. versus having to go through all of those fights that I would have had gone through because I felt like I was obligated to take care of my mom in a certain way.
Yes.
Instead of letting go and letting the people that I had hired to run the place and me not try to be there.
Mm-hmm. Do you think
I feel
some
like
of that
I've been on a rabbit trail with y'all? I know y'all can cut
no, it. No, it's fine. No,
some of that.
So this is going to be like two episodes. I can feel it.
But
so
some of that, I'll ask this, Consuela. Some of that, do you think it was because that relationship improved because you said, you know what? It's good enough. Like you kind of let mm-hmm. it go. Like when you said, I'm not going to go dress her, I'm going to walk in and she's in the chair and what I'm doing is it's good enough.
You know what? I don't think I made the decision. Someone helped me make the decision.
Yeah.
Mm. I kept saying, I could be in the bed and tell my mom, tell my husband, I got to get up. I got to go over there and get mom up. And he'd be like, that's why you got to work with. I'm like, no, but I've got to, you know how mama is. She ain't going to act right with those girls. So let me get yes. up and go. And I would get up over and over and over and go get my mom. And I'm not saying my mom was horrible every time. But I think I was putting myself under a lot of stress to make her sure. say, I want to be here with you. You're doing a great mm-hmm. job, daughter.
Did she ever say it?
No.
No. Yeah, you're not going to get it.
Emily, I think Emily says that out of probably experience that we probably realize that you may not ever get it.
Yep. I didn't.
But,
from her, but okay. I do know I received it. I received it from mm-hmm. the person who's given me the reason why I needed to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who's given me the strength to do it. And I had to put it back in his hands on how to do it. And that's mm-hmm. the whole premise of finding a foothold. You may feel in your heart you need to do something to care for your parents, but then the waters get really muggy when you don't stay balanced in how. The how is yes. where everybody falls off the surfboard, falls off the track is in the how. Mm-hmm. So everything yes. that I say it toward now, if y'all can just cut and edit and just like throw it out the window, no. that's really the meat. You can want to care for your loved ones because this is this thing put in your heart. And I can say, yes. I didn't put it in my heart. I did not wake up and say, because, you know, for me, I could say, you know, I've had my years of caregiving because it was rough raising my daughter and finding a path for her and helping her find her way and just, and, you know, and balancing the marriage and all of that during these mm-hmm. these young years when we thought, okay, child number two, this is going to be easy because we've had number one and it didn't go anything like that. And we were all in the marriage, like almost like, why? You know, why yeah. us? But yeah. it had made such a strong marriage. When I tell you, and I'm going to say this, you can't do this without a husband. You can. But for me, it would have been so difficult because he's yeah. the one who kept me sane.
I would agree with that.
Who kept me, I don't want to say out of jail because I didn't ever want to break the law.
My husband keeps me out of jail.
But yes. I thought the thought because it made me feel good. But I know mm-hmm. it was just the bad part of me, like, ooh, fuck it, you know. And I've had a threaten because she would throw this number on me. I wish I was dead.
Oh,
that's what she would tell yes. me.
We get that one too.
So put one me day in hospice. Has, that's what she says. That's put me in hospice. Just go ahead and call hospice. Mom, we're not, we don't live in a state where we're allowed to just, you know, yeah. basically do euthanasia for the year. We can't put you down. We can't take you to the vet. Yeah.
Drop me off at the nursing home.
Either drop her off at the vet or the nursing. Just drop me off at the nursing home, girls.
Just take me now. Yep.
My mom would just, whenever I didn't do anything that, you know, the way she wanted was like, I wish mm-hmm. I was dead. And then one day I was just not in the frame of mind and I was fixing her bed and I was doing things and just getting her turned and rotated. And I had this pillow in my hand. I said, Mom, what you say? I wish I was dead. Cause you knew that would get to me. I would leave the room like, Mom, don't say that. So I just had the pillow in my hand, y'all, and God is my witness. I just mm-hmm. laid it on her face like that, and I folded my hands like that. And she went, blah, 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 blah. She was just like, oh, just like threw the pillow, and I'm like, don't ever say that to me again, Mom. Please mm-hmm. don't ever say that to me again. Do you know how much that hurts? And she looked at me.
Oh, it does.
I said, Mom, what were you thinking when I put that? I thought she was going to kill me. I say, Mom, I would never do that. But do you know how that feels when you tell me keep bringing that up when I don't, like, mm-hmm. Mom, it's time to get out of bed. And she goes, man, I wish I was dead. I'm like, don't ever say that again.
Yeah.
Your wish might come true.
True.
And so, not from you. I don't think that's
not
from
me. No, I never would have done that. You know, it was just like, I just like, Ma, that was just one of those things that she would do because she knew it.
Mm-hmm. Well, she got a rise out of you.
That was the button.
She knew my eyes was going to get teary and she knew I was going to mm-hmm. be angry the rest of the day because I didn't do something that she wanted to do.
I always try to hit it with humor when she, you know, will say those things. And I'm like, you know, I wish I was dead. I'm like, honey, not today. We're all going to die, but not today.
Oh, yeah.
So, that really kind of zips it pretty fast.
You know, it sounds like, because we want to get to our sister questions.
Yeah.
And so, because I really, again, there's so much more to unpack. This is so good. When I say this is so good, it's so authentic. Yeah. It's so authentic because I think this happens in so many families and no one wants to talk about that, you know. It's just so flipping hard some days. I've walked in to see my mom before and she looks at me and she says, where's JJ? And I'm thinking, what the hell? Yes. Like, you have not seen me in a year and you say, where's JJ? I could beat you to death right now. And I'm like, hold on, Mom. Let me go find the second coming Jesus's younger sibling.
You know, I know that we want to jump in and get the sister question, but I have one thing that Consuela told us. Ooh. Because one thing in our first call, Consuela, and it was that, you know, the relationship wasn't perfect and you didn't always think that everybody saw that. And I know for our listeners, your mom did pass away, of course,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there was something that happened at your mom's funeral.
Oh, yeah.
That Pinky was everybody, everybody thought Pinky was perfect.
Yeah, her funeral was hard for me.
Yeah.
Because I was steaming hot, mad.
Yep.
A lot had transpired in the end with her going to the nursing home and some anger. Oh, not some anger, just some disappointments from some sisters that mm-hmm. I made that transition. But I waited and I waited and I held on just thinking that, you know, the day is coming, you know. And mm-hmm. then it was just, I'm going to pass through that part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is just the good times of where she wanted to be and to enjoy life before she got so, mm-hmm. so in pain.
Yeah. Yeah,
those years had passed till it wasn't going to even be enjoyable to make that move. And right. to make that move yeah. at that point would have just, it was to feel that need of the sister versus allowing my mom to really enjoy those final years with
yeah.
that. Not that my sister did anything wrong, because this yeah. was my mom's story in my mom's mm-hmm. head.
Right.
And I do believe I was the one that was supposed to do what was being done.
Yeah.
And it wasn't mm-hmm. meant for my sister to do it, but my mom didn't believe that. She had
right.
her.
Yeah. It was something that your pastor said.
But then at the funeral, everybody yeah. was given the accolades, and I knew some of it was true. And look, some of it was like fresh for me because I had forgotten a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being bogged down with the rejection, the rejection, the rejection, the rejection, the rejection mm-hmm. every day
yeah.
of what I was feeling.
Yeah.
And I can't even blame that on my mom. See, I'm going to tell you how much growth is. Before, I always thought my mom made me feel rejected. I made myself feel rejected because I wasn't doing it the way yes. that it was supposed to be done. I didn't yeah. let go of that need to get her approval yeah. until much later.
Yeah.
And once I got mm-hmm. that, I will tell you, there was going to be a period, even in when she was in the nursing home, that I felt this freedom. And I went up there and we had good times.
Yeah.
Well, we had these times where we could laugh about things and little jokes while me sitting next to her bed that I wasn't doing when she was in the home with me. Yeah. But at the mm-hmm. funeral, it was just like everybody was saying a lot of good things and they were asking if anybody else wanted to say anything. And I had sisters that actually were bold enough to get up and talk and wipe away the tears and say good things about my mom. Number one, I didn't have anything to say.
Right.
It was hard. And I was sort of angry at myself that, girl, why don't you have anything good to say? And I just couldn't think of anything. I couldn't think mm-hmm. of anything. It was just so depressing, pushed down, that I really didn't think I had anything I needed to say. Did I hate my mom? No. Did I wish she was right there in the coffin? No. But I was just numb. I didn't have yeah. anything mm-hmm. I wanted to say. And then but I was starting to get angry because everybody had all these little stories about how wonderful she was. And I'm like, I was confused. I was just like, mm-hmm. Then the pastor, he got up and talked. And I was just had my head down because I had some tears, but it was just not out of sorrow. It was just that I was sort of now getting mad that mm-hmm. everybody mm-hmm. was saying how wonderful my mom was. And the pastor just stated that, you know, I've heard all of these things and everybody knows how good Miss Pinky was. And that's what they called her, Miss Pinky or Sister Pinky at church. And my mom was a part of every little organization. And there was enough of us till she just self-appointed one of us to do something in each organization. Girl, go help over there. So I was like helping over there. So all of us sisters were like really involved in the church because it was a small church and they needed hands and feet. So my mom mm-hmm. self-appointed us to different organizations, and that's what we did in the church. And we enjoyed it. That was our whole life. Church was our whole life growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm really thankful mm-hmm. for it now.
Yeah. Oh,
But at the time, it was just our life and it's what we did. But the pastor was saying, but I have a feeling there's another part of this that needs to be talked about. And I'm like, my eye went up and I'm like, And he just said, you know what? I'm sure things were rough in the end. And he just started describing the life of a caregiver. And I'm like, wow. Oh my gosh, what is this pastor saying? And he just said, you know, we have to know that, you know, all of these sisters, and he didn't know anything. I hadn't seen this man since I moved and got married anyway. But he was part of the church then, and he was still part of the church. And he just started saying about how he was proud of all of the daughters for really being there and being there for his mom, that there is nobody showing up that hadn't been in her life. And that was thing he said, but I want to say, who was taking care of her? And he just started talking about the caregiving roles that I know it had to be hard. As angelic as Miss Pinky sound, I'm pretty sure he had some rough times. And I think I lost it then because I knew it was God's way of putting like a stamp that I did okay.
You know what? That's exactly right. Because God knew what you needed to hear.
Yeah.
So did that pastor.
Yeah. And for me, like I see Emily for the listeners.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I wish that you could see me because I have these tears in my eyes, Consuela. And the reason is because that's why we do it. And I think that regardless, if you don't get that approval that you always seek, at some point there is that light. There is that, hey, you did a good job. Faithful one. Like, I think that's there.
I think it is. You know, it wasn't a struggle. Let me tell you. I think the struggles that my mom had was to develop me.
Yeah.
It was to develop me. I had the physical skills. Look, I can get my mom in and out of that chair and lure her and just do it. So I had to, because she would thought I was throwing her in the chair. You're throwing me like a sack of potatoes is what she would say. If she even felt anything, it did craft my skills. Mm-hmm. It gave me patience for her. But I was driven by the wrong things. I was driven by the satisfaction of having her say, oh, you're doing so good. When I should have been like leaning into the why I'm even doing it. Yes. Why I'm doing it because I think I'm called to do it. And I think I have everything that I'm supposed to have. I'm going to have along the way. It's going to be developed. It's going to be there because it's going to come from within me. It's going to be birthed through me in the process of caring for her. I did learn that, you all. I did learn to let go. I did learn to, somebody had a quote and on Instagram last night till I think I wrote a paragraph on it that, you know, that talked about that, about just how to say humble and calm, even and not put up with crap. And stay, but keeping your boy, stay within your bond boundary, staying humble and calm, but don't put up with crap. And when they said, they didn't say crap, they said the other word. That's exactly what I had to learn.
Yeah,
put up with her crap, stay humble, stay calm with her, but don't fudge on what I know I'm called to do and the how I'm called to do it. Yeah. I did learn that. She just was never happy. And I should have just stuck with that. Do what I'm called to do, whether she is happy or not. And that was the component I want caregivers to know. They don't have to like it, but you don't have to become crappy. You don't have to be angry. You don't have to be disrespectful, but you've got to be firm in what you're going to do and you're not going to do and stick to it and live your life, or you're going to lose yourself in the process because you're trying to change the emotions of somebody that may never change. And I had to get there.
I had to get there
for myself.
That is everything.
You are amazing.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not even going to go to sister questions. I'm going to end it right there because that in itself, what you've just shared is the money. That is what people need to hear. That's what I mean by like, this is so good because it's so authentic and true. And people need to not put this mask, take off your mask of perfection and this need for acceptance.
She's got the sisters crying right here.
Oh, Lord. Like everybody can't see the crying. The crying sisters is amazing. You know, Jay, why don't you
Why don't you close this out? Because I think we're going to have Consuela back. I want to have Consuela back and have another episode.
Well, we do just want to thank Consuela because you are amazing. And
you're a blessing is what you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, she yes. is a blessing. Mm-hmm. And thank you. And thank our listeners for checking in with us because we are so blessed to have all of them. And we are blessed to call Consuela a friend and a sister.
She is an honorary sister.
Yes.
All right. Yes. Thanks, guys. Oh. Thanks so much. Thanks, Consuela.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Again, thank you so much for listening. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions podcast. Don't forget to visit our website to sign up for our newsletter. You'll also find the video recording of all of our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. Don't worry, all the details are included in the show notes below. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you. Okay, let's talk disclaimers. You may be surprised to find out, but we are not medical professionals and are not providing any medical advice. If you have any medical questions, we recommend that you talk with a medical professional of your choice. As always, my sisters and I at Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver have taken care in selecting the speakers, but the opinions of our speakers are theirs alone. The views and opinions stated in this podcast are solely those of the contributors and not necessarily those of our distributors or hosting company. This podcast is copyrighted and no part can be reproduced without the expressed written consent of the Sisterhood of Care, LLC.